First Lady Melania Trump is meeting with tech companies this week to talk about preventing online harassment, the newest version of an old problem, bullying. And we're going to be talking about that issue all week, starting with our guest today, Dorothy Espelage, professor of psychology at the University of Florida, and Nadine Connell, director of the Center for Crime and Justice Studies at the University of Texas, Dallas. They spoke with Jeremy Hobson.
When people hear about bullying, some people might think, oh, those kids will grow up to be fine. You know, this is just something that happens. What do we know? What does the research tell us about the lifelong effect, if there is one, of being bullied? I'll start with you, Dorothy.
Yeah. So when we think about being victimized chronically through bullying, we know from the research that decades later, maybe 30 years later, if you're chronically victimized, you will have a full-blown diagnosis of major depressive disorder or generalized anxiety disorder. So it's serious consequences for the victims. We also know that those kids that engage in high rates of bullying through childhood and adolescence actually go on to become much more kind of skilled in their aggressive behaviors, and that their bullying turns into homophobic name-calling, sexual harassment. And as we track these kids into high school, they actually perpetrate more teen dating violence in their dating relationships. So it really is this continuum of perpetration. So it's not just that bullying is a cause for concern. It's the type of aggression that follows.
Nadine, your thoughts on the long-term effects of bullying?
Well, so I want to add to what Dorothy has just said about the bullying perpetrators is not only, as she mentioned, do we see these later aggressive behaviors in high school, but we have actually been able to follow up with self-identified bullies into later adulthood, and they are more likely to engage in higher rates of criminal offending. We're not just talking about it all goes away after school age or after high school, but it continues on into patterns of adulthood that can be really dangerous, problematic, and costly for society, which is why this is such an important area to study and to understand.
And so what's the start of the cycle? Why does somebody become a bully in the first place?
Oh, that's a great question. We know a little bit, but not a lot, or not as much as we would like to. I can speak to some of the work that we've done, again, looking at more delinquent populations, which speaks to a variety of different reasons. In our research, we found that childhood trauma could actually have an impact in later bullying perpetration. So more traumatic events spoke to the need for earlier intervention.
Yeah, certainly we know that it's complex, right? So there's not just one predictor, but we know that there's individual characteristics. Kids that engage in high rates of bullying tend to have lots of anger. They have difficulty in regulating their emotions. They may come from families in which they witness violence. They may be in schools where the adults bully one another and role modeling that behavior. We do know from our work that by early adolescence, if you hang out with kids that bully, you will become more like them. It's kind of a birds of a feather flock together. So we do really see it as a complex interaction between my individual characteristics, my family context, the school context, and then certainly society as we see these types of behaviors being modeled on the television. So all of these together place you at a risk. We're seeing some of these mean and cruel behaviors emerge in preschool playgroups. So we do know that it's something that we need to intervene and stop early, but we need to intervene in different ways to be able to address those individual characteristics that place kids at risk, talking with families, creating safe spaces in schools where bullying is not seen as a positive thing. So it's a very complex problem. Unfortunately, our solutions have been too simple, and we are having challenges in reducing bullying in our schools, in our communities.
And how much has it changed because of online cyberbullying? How much has that changed the way that people bully, how many people are being bullied, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly the flavor of it has changed. And so when I was younger, decades ago, when I left school, any issues I had at school stayed at school. Here it follows them. We do know from the national data, however, that the online bullying, about 7% of kids report experiencing that on a regular basis, but we know face-to-face ranges from 15 to 20%. So the approach is certainly that social media has changed things, has had us think about our intervention programs differently, but certainly we need to recognize that kids are still engaging these behaviors face-to-face at school.
I don't want to make this segment about politics, but you can't really talk about cyberbullying without talking about President Trump. Is he having an impact as far as you can tell?
we are certainly at a time where there is a greater spectrum of behaviors that appear to be appropriate, especially when it comes to social media and being online, than used to be in the past. And it would be silly to presume that students and young people don't notice that and don't act accordingly.
Absolutely. And I'll add to that, we spend a lot of time in the schools since the election, and it is very, very clear that boys engaging in sexual harassment are defending their behaviors by pointing to the president.
Hmm. One of the storylines that we have seen over the last many years is that when there is a school shooting, sometimes people say, oh, well, that person who opened fire on his fellow students was bullied, and that led to what happened. What do you think when you hear that?
I had someone call me and say that exact comment after the shooting in Parkland. And my immediate question was, well, what else do you know about him?
Meaning that that can't be the only reason.
Absolutely.
And I can add to that in part because we are undertaking the first comprehensive data collection of all school shootings that have happened in the United States. And I think when we look at those students in previous school shooting events, such as at Columbine, such as in Jonesboro, and we take a look because there have been claims made that they were victims of bullying, those claims don't hold up to the level that we would expect. It seems that victims of bullying are much more likely to internalize. You know, Dorothy mentioned major depressive disorder, anxiety, things that do not include harm to others. And that is not to say that there aren't some individuals who do lash out as a result of their experiences, but it is much too complex to suggest that bullying is the only reason or is the most important reason as to why somebody decides to bring a gun to a school. And in fact, in many cases, several of the individuals have turned out to be bullying themselves, bullying other students. So not even so much a victim as much as possibly a perpetrator.
If there is a parent listening to this who thinks that their child is being bullied, what would you tell them to do?
You know, if you're a parent and hearing that your child is being bullied is probably going to be a very painful and one of the worst things that you can hear. And there are lots of things that a parent can do. One is to acknowledge their child's experiences and feelings about the situation, because it really is something that can be very upsetting to a child, and we don't want to minimize that. The other thing that they can do is talk to teachers, but also talk to your child about finding positive spaces for them and a place where they feel like they belong, and having them be part of the solution. I think sometimes as parents, we want to protect our child, and so we tell our children how to fix something instead of letting them tell us what they think is best. And when it comes to bullying in school dynamics, students understand those social relationships better than we as adults do many times. And so it's important to empower your student to help figure out solutions in ways that would make them feel good about how to handle the situation.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think that oftentimes I hear from parents that they go to the school, they'll tell the school does nothing. And so the parents that are listening here, keep good records of when you go to the school. Really do understand your rights as a parent and the rights of your children. But I would have them take really copious notes and track the ways in which they've been trying to get help from the school.
So let's talk about solutions. What is the one thing that you would say could be done to reduce the amount of bullying out there? I'll start with you, Dorothy.
Yeah, so I want everybody to understand that we're not doing a really good job in reducing bullying. In the best case scenarios in many countries outside of the United States, best case scenario, they're reducing bullying by 20 to 23%. So I think that, you know, we take a real kind of holistic approach. I do school-based interventions where we teach kids empathy and perspective taking and ways in which to manage conflict and nonviolent strategies. But we also have to train the teachers and the administrators to be responsive when there are reports of bullying. We also want to take what we call as a school climate improvement process. We know very strongly that when there is a positive school climate where the teachers get along and the kids feel safe, there's less bullying, there's less sexual harassment. And so we have to focus on understanding, giving kids skills, and placing them in schools where they feel safe such that bullying is deterred.
We as adults do have the power to set the norms and the behavioral expectations for students. And it's really up to us to make sure that we are not only doing that, but we're promoting the positive behavior and we are dealing with the negative behavior so that students know there are consequences and that it matters and that how we treat people matters.
That's Nadine Connell, who is director of the Center for Crime and Justice Studies at the University of Texas, Dallas, and Dorothy Espelage, professor of psychology at the University of Florida. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.